Welcome to Beyond Blathers, the podcast where we dive deeper into the insects, fish, and fossils you can find in Animal Crossing New Horizons. I'm Sophia Osborne.
And I'm Olivia DeBercier.
And if you want to support the show, you can check out our merch store at etsy.com/shop/beyondblathers to see the stickers and sticker sheets we have for sale.
You can also join our Patreon to receive a monthly sticker and print in the mail from me. So, Sophia, I want to make a special point before we start the episode to mention that spring has sprung officially in Edmonton. So I'm in just a great mood. I saw 4 butterflies on my walk today. I saw 3 morning cloaks and 1 comma. So just very exciting news. I'm just like, I don't think I've ever been so ready for like the warmth of summer as I am right now.
That's so nice. Yeah, it was a really beautiful weekend here too. And just, you know, reading in the park and like the tulips are out and so many plum blossoms here in Vancouver. I'm really obsessed with plum blossoms right now. Like everyone hypes up cherry blossoms so much, but I think plum blossoms are like really where it's at.
They're the superior blossom.
Yeah, I think so. But definitely my mental health is improved a lot. feeling good. Yeah, and I'm happy that that is starting for you there in Edmonton.
Yeah, and it's just like nice because I'm sort of living closer to campus now, so I feel like the community is much more active where I am now, and so it's just been nice to like walk around, see everyone, and like every once in a while run into someone I know. It just feels like everyone's come out of hibernation.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's such a thing, like in places like Edmonton that are so cold and where the winter lasts for so long. Like once the spring starts, it's everyone is just so excited. It's the same here in Vancouver. Like when the rain stops, it's a big deal. Like when the sun actually comes out.
Yeah, big stuff going on for us.
Yeah, well, we hope everyone else is also enjoying spring if it's sprung where you are. And yeah, we're really excited to be here today because we are talking about hammerhead sharks.
Yeah, and I don't know, I'm sorry, it's a bit rude of us to hold off talking about another shark for so long. I really just should have done this one ages ago, but better late than never. And today we have so much to talk about. The strange, bizarre shape of the hammerhead shark's head. It's prowess as a predator, its migrations, and also how important ocean conservation is to these endangered sharks. So we're going to talk about a lot of that today.
Great. Yeah, I'm really excited. And I think it's okay that you saved it because, you know, there's a lot of animals in the game, but there's like not a ton of these like super iconic ones. So I think spreading them out is good.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's see what Blathers has to say about the hammerhead shark. So if you bring a hammerhead shark to Blathers, he'll say, "The hammerhead shark is known for its distinctive hammer-shaped head, hence the name. Obviously. Anywho, this oddly shaped head allows the beast to see 360 degrees around itself from top to bottom. Imagine being able to see so widely. You could check for untied shoelaces and imminent rain simultaneously."
It is indeed very useful. And Blathers is right here. So the oddly shaped heads of the hammerhead shark does indeed help them to see around themselves more easily. And they do this by sort of sweeping their heads side to side and rolling their eyeballs and stuff so they can get like a full view of everything. And yeah, it does cover 360 degrees. But being able to see 360 degrees around them isn't really unique to hammerheads. Other sharks also have this excellent vision range, but what's special about the hammerheads is that they have much greater overlap between their two eyes and what those two eyes can see, meaning that they have more binocular vision than other sharks, which helps them with their depth perception.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's really interesting. I did not realize sharks, like all sharks, have 360 degree vision.
I'm not sure that it's all of them, but I was looking at a study that sort of compared like a few species that are of different groups. And yeah, they were able to see that a lot of them have, yeah, pretty good view of their surroundings, especially because those eyes are on the sides of their heads. Like ours are pointed straight forward, so we obviously can't see anything behind us, but a lot of animals have those eyes right on the side, so they have really good range of vision.
Yeah, definitely. That's super interesting. Could you talk more about the hammerhead?
Yeah. There's actually a name for the hammerhead. It's called a cephalofoil. So fancy little term there for you. And it's not just like, I don't know, sometimes it just looks like this weird sort of flabby piece of skin with the eyes on the end. But the actual skull of the shark is totally modified to make up this shape. So it's a very like strong cephalofoil, I guess. And I also want to take a moment to appreciate just how weird looking this shark is. And I just think, like, it's a very familiar, as you said before, iconic image to us. But, like, imagine if you'd never seen a picture of a hammerhead shark, and then you saw one in, like, a museum, and maybe it was some sort of long extinct shark from before the dinosaurs. You'd just think it was, like, the most bizarre thing that could have ever existed, and that, like, maybe the paleontologists got the image of it wrong. Like, it just is so weird looking. I think we're too used to how hammerhead sharks look.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I mean, same with so many animals like giraffes or things like that. It's just like, what?
Yeah.
How is that a real thing?
It's cool too, because there's like so few animals that have this weird like hammerhead thing going on. Like there is a thing called the hammerhead worm, which looks just like a hammerhead shark crossed with a worm or like a slug. It's super weird. And then there's also like the stock-eyed fly comes to mind. If you've ever seen one of those, it is just like a little fly, but its eyes are on long stalks, which I know it probably sounds dumb. I'm just like, it's a hammerhead worm. It looks like a hammerhead and a worm, and it's a stock-eyed fly. But like those are the only other animals I can think of that look even a little bit like the shark. And those are two invertebrates, which, you know, invertebrates have like a huge diversity of body forms. But like, is there really anything else that looks like a hammerhead shark? No. Like, they're so unique.
Yeah, they are.
The cephalofoil itself, so the hammerhead, it comes in a variety of shapes depending on the species. For some, it's a very distinct T-shape. For others, there's a bit more of a shovel-shaped appearance to it. These ones are called the bonnet heads. So a bonnet head shark is still a type of hammerhead shark, if you've ever heard someone refer to bonnet heads before. But in general, hammerheads are known to be really very good and dexterous swimmers. And they're even able to, like, shift their head slightly up and down, which is something that other sharks in their family can't do. And actually, this is very important because the cephalofoil helps the shark maneuver more efficiently. Most of the time, the shark is having to put more effort into swimming in order to push that big cephalofoil through the water. But when it's hunting, you know, just above that sandy seafloor, if something's, like, a stingray pops up from the sand, all the shark has to do is lift that cephalofoil up a tiny bit, and suddenly, like, physics kicks in. The cephalofoil acts like an airplane wing, and it creates lift. The cephalofoil shape helps the hammerhead rapidly go up and snatch its prey. So it's sort of like, imagine a plane taking off, and it just sort of goes whoop upwards. It's sort of like that, but with the shark's head, so it's able to sort of move with its prey. So that's how the cephalofoil uses the hydrodynamic forces to its advantage while hunting.
Wow.
But sight and impressive maneuverability isn't the only trick hammerheads have up their sleeves. Like many other creatures in the ocean, including other sharks, hammerheads can sense electricity coursing through the conductive water of the oceans. They can do this by using these little tiny sensory organs called ampullae of Lorenzini. It's a very fancy name. It's named after this, like, doctor who, like, named them but also didn't know what they do. But anyway, kind of a funny name.
It sounds like a dessert.
It does. Like, Lorenzini. I think it's because it's an Italian name. It
yeah.
sounds like something really yummy. Some, like, good
type
food.
Of pasta, yeah.
Yeah. So these ampullae, they look like little dots lining the area around the shark's mouths and overall the underside of the head, kind of near the nose. If you think of a photo of a great white shark coming out of the water, oftentimes you can see these little, like, They look like blackheads around their nose. Those are the ampullae. And the ampullae give sharks a superpower that us humans don't have, and that is the ability to sense electrical fields around prey. Something I also find really cool about these ampullae is that all of our ancestors also had this electrosensing ability at one point, because all vertebrates share a common ancestor who possessed the ampullae, because they are an ancestral feature of the jawed fishes of which all of us vertebrates are derived from. Today, only certain fish still have the ampullae, including sharks and rays, but all animals swimming around have muscles that are firing off electrical signals that can be felt by the ampullae. So they're really very useful, and it's kind of weird to me that so many creatures would have lost the ability to feel these electrical signals, but generally, electrical signals are pretty important in the ocean because water is such a good conductor, and so it ends up playing into a lot of, like, how creatures maneuver around in the water. So even though they might not have ampullae, they may still be able to detect electrical signals with different body parts. But anyway, enough about other ocean creatures. Let's focus back in on the hammerheads. They are able to feel living things around them, even when the water is murky or dark, or prey is hiding, like around rocks or under the sand. And better yet, the huge surface area created by the hammerhead, or the cephalofoil, allows the sharks to have even more ampullae than other species and to be able to detect changes in the electrical signals around it with more precision. All these nerve endings, though, they need to put their information somewhere. So hammerheads actually have the biggest brains among the sharks. So they're like the little shark geniuses, the brainiacs. And this led me down a bit of a rabbit hole because I was like, wait, are sharks smart? Are they like a smart fish in a conventional human sense? And I did find one paper, and this information isn't specific to hammerhead sharks, but I did find a review paper that discussed shark intelligence by Brown and Schlussel from 2023. There's some fun facts that I was like, these are kind of delightful. I think I'm going to share these. So in this paper, they discuss various other studies that have suggested that sharks are capable of recognizing sounds associated with food, like the engine of a fishing boat, which draws sharks in who are looking to eat the caught fish. Another study by Vila, Puka, and Brown from 2018, they had a little bit of fun with the idea of sharks responding to food related stimuli, and so they wanted to see if these juvenile Port Jackson sharks would swim to a particular spot in their tank when they heard jazz music, and they did. Though in a later test, it appeared that the sharks were merely responding to the sound of music in general, but that they didn't have quite enough taste to recognize the difference between jazz and blues.
Wow, that's really cute though. I feel like maybe if people weren't so scared of sharks, we'd have more research like this. Like, I feel like they're just so villainized that probably not that many people are interested in looking into whether they can be trained or whether they're intelligent.
Yeah, like a shark can learn things that I feel like is an important thing to talk about. Like, it has a brain and it has thoughts of some kind, little sharky thoughts. And yeah, like maybe it would be more like dolphins, where we put dolphins through every possible intelligent scenario known to man. Like, I don't know. They probably couldn't pass as many tests, but, you know, it would be nice to know.
Just get sharks just, like, jumping through hoops.
I would love to see that. Like, especially, like, one of those cute, like, blue sharks. I love those. And I guess, like, whale sharks, because they've got the name whale associated with them, I've always thought of them as smarter, even though, like, I never examined that thought very much until this moment where I was like, wait a second, it's just because they've got whale in the name. I'm, like, so vulnerable to any kind of suggestion. I'm like, oh yeah, whale sharks, they're probably the smartest.
I feel like whale sharks are probably kind of, like, head empty.
Their like mouths so are just hanging open, staring blankly yeah. into space, just letting, like, food passively interact with them.
Yeah, I don't know. It makes sense to me. Like, in some way, I feel like everything, I don't know. Was there a hammerhead shark character in, oh, what's the shark movie?
Like Shark Tales?
Yeah, Shark Tales.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think they were all sort of great white inspired. but I haven't seen that movie in a long time. Everything I know about that movie, I think I've acquired from memes.
Oh, right, because Shark Tale's mostly, like, not about the sharks.
Yeah.
The sharks are, like...
They're, like, right, okay. They're like villain characters.
Mm, right, of. Okay. Wow. I gotta rewatch.
Clearly, yeah, I think we need to do a rewatch. Going back to the Hammerhead's, like, other strange abilities, though. So we've got a combination of keen eyesight that gives them pretty solid binocular vision. And they have a keen ability to sense even the most well-hidden fish under the sand using their ampullae. So all of this makes them not only incredible hunters, but they're also able to eat a very particular kind of food that includes, but also is not limited to, flatfishes and stingrays. So flatfishes meaning like any fish that's just kind of flat and lying on the surface of the seafloor. So like something like a flounder, for example. But beyond the flatfishes and the stingrays, hammerheads will also eat crustaceans and squid. Hammerhead sharks are known to be opportunistic predators, but they have disproportionately tiny mouths relative to other sharks. So, you know, you can just search up a picture and you'll see they have this like tiny little puppet mouth. So flatfish are just easier to grab and eat with a slightly smaller mouth like they have.
Oh, I love a little, like a little teeny mouth. It's really adorable. Like
it's
on the
cute.
Yeah.
It looks like they just have a little small frowny face at all times.
Yeah, exactly. So how do they actually like it sounds like they couldn't like eat their prey whole probably.
Yeah, like from what I read, it seems like a lot of them will actually use their hammerhead like a hammer and they will hit and stun their prey with their head, which I would love to see a video of this. I bet it looks a lot more elegant than it sounds. So once the prey is immobilized, then they sort of take bites out of it and start to eat. So yeah, that's sort of how that works. This brings us to also like shark bites in general. So there are actually no reported hammerhead shark fatalities, despite the fact that some hammerheads are known to be quite aggressive, like the great hammerhead, a species that is 4 meters or 13 feet long on average and can get up to 20 feet or 6 meters long. I'm going to pause there just to give you an idea of how enormous that is. I just had a moment reading this in my kitchen where I was just like, 20 feet at a maximum. That is enormous. That is a huge shark. And granted, that's like pretty rare. They can get really old though, like 44 years I was seeing. So, you know, if you've got a really old shark and it just keeps growing, it's going to get 20 feet long. Pretty crazy. Anyway, there are 18 documented, unprovoked, non-fatal attacks reported of hammerhead sharks on humans, according to the International Shark Attack File. Though, keep in mind, most of the time when people are being attacked by sharks, they're not really sitting there IDing the shark, so sometimes these facts are not, these stats are not, like, perfectly accurate, but still, that's not an enormous number of documented attacks. And these are, like we said, non-fatal, they're usually bites, still sucks. Would not want to be any of these unfortunate victims. If you are interested, though, in learning more about shark attacks, I really recommend this website. So the International Shark Attack File, it's through the Florida Museum, and I found it totally fascinating. It maps out all the different shark attacks and bites and things, and it breaks it down by species when that's possible, by year, by region. It's just a really cool website. It also gives you some context about how rare unprovoked shark attacks are. Unprovoked meaning that like these sharks aren't being actively like taken out of the water by fishing vessels and then people get bitten because yeah, the animal's gonna bite you because you're like doing the craziest thing possible to it. So yeah, that's sort of what that means.
Wow, that's amazing that it goes so back so far though.
It's so cool. Like, I'm just like, I was looking through this for way too long and thought it was super interesting.
And you mentioned the great hammerhead shark. Does that mean there are multiple species?
Yeah, so there's 9 to 10 species, depending on how you define a species. All but one of these species are within the genus Sphyrna. I think that's how you pronounce it. The winghead shark, which is a species, is also within its own genus. The winghead shark has the greatest ratio of hammerhead length to its body, so it looks pretty cool, but it's relatively small and will only get to about 2 meters at the very longest. The great hammerhead is known for being impressively large and fearsome, as I said before. It mostly eats other sharks and rays. Then there's also the bonnethead sharks, which I mentioned before. They're a bit smaller. They eat mostly crabs. And because they're eating such hard-bodied animals, they have these really cool teeth. I was looking at a photo of them, and they're like smoothed and blunted in the backs of their jaws, so they almost look like one of those like puka shell necklaces. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's like a very smooth tooth surface. So those are the bonnet heads. And actually, bonnet heads in the Gulf of Mexico have been found with seagrass in their stomach contents, and it seems like they're actually able to digest plant matter fairly well, making them one of the few omnivorous sharks, along with whale sharks. But yeah, hammerhead sharks in general, like, you can really find them all over the world, which I didn't realize. Like, you can find them in Canadian waters. Not usually super far north, but it happens every once in a while. Like, we have them in our fisheries database. But for the most part, you're going to find the greatest diversity in tropical climates, of course, and sort of, like, mild, like, warmish temperate oceans. They're also a shark species that tend to prefer to be around like coastlines, and they will go into deeper waters, but it's not super common for them. They really like those warm waters, and the deeper they go, the cooler it gets. Actually, on that topic, I wasn't going to talk about this before, but there is this really cool study that was looking at hammerhead sharks going into deeper waters where it's colder, and they will hold their breath. Or at least that's what the scientists think they're doing. They put some trackers on these sharks, and they found that like they were really reducing their like sort of porousness. Like they didn't want to let water go through their gills or anything to keep them from losing their heat while they went down and hunted at deeper depths. And then they would come back up to the warmer water. So that was kind of cool. I was like, oh, wow, like fish holding their breath underwater. That's kind of neat. I've never thought about that.
That's so interesting. Wow. And I remember when we talked about great white sharks, we learned that they actually give birth to live young. Do hammerheads do that too?
Yeah. So they are also viviparous, which is what we call something that's giving birth to live young. So hammerheads, as well as multiple other species of shark, do not lay eggs. They just let their young right out of them, and then they sort of ditch them, and then the young have to go and like survive on their own. Depending on the species of hammerhead, a single mother shark may give birth to around 12 to 40 shark pups, with great hammerheads giving birth to the most individuals typically. Oddly enough, there's something else really weird I found about their reproduction, and that is that female hammerhead sharks are capable of reproducing without a male to contribute genetic content. So it's sort of this like, quote, like virginal birth. This process is called parthenogenesis. And up until a study by Chapman and Al was published in 2007, it had been basically described in all major animal lineages, with the exception of mammals and cartilaginous fish. So yeah, we just hadn't seen this parthenogenesis in sharks, rays, or chimeras. But for a while, it was speculated that it was possible, given that bony fishes could sometimes do it. And sharks are also very capable of long-term sperm storage for months or years. So that meant that over time, we've been seeing pretty frequently in captive situations, sharks or rays who, you know, hadn't been near a potential mate for years, they would just suddenly sort of become pregnant. And it was thought, okay, well, this is probably not happening through parthenogenesis. This is probably just like when we caught them, whatever, in the wild, they'd already made it and they're just holding onto the sperm. But yeah, so that's what the staff at the Nebraska Aquarium thought in 2001 when one of their three hammerhead sharks gave birth to a pup. Now, this pup unfortunately was killed by another fish in the tank fairly quickly, but the adult sharks, they had been captured from the wild when they were less than a year old in the Florida Keys. And 3 years later, you have one of them giving birth. So, you know, maybe this was long-term sperm storage, but the problem is hammerheads you know, if they're under a year old, they're definitely too young to be sexually mature. They're very unlikely to be capable of storing sperm. So they ran the genetic tests, and sure enough, there was no sign of male genetic material. So parthenogenesis had occurred. This is probably a pretty rare occurrence and would only happen in the wild when there's no males around. And it's definitely not a great solution if we're talking about shark conservation, because with more of these types of individuals born, you would expect to see a decrease in genetic diversity, which is really important if you want to have a really disease-resistant population. So it's a really cool thing, but it's not necessarily like a thing that will like save hammerhead sharks.
Right, yeah. That's so interesting. I mean, how social are they in the wild? Like, are they in schools of hammerheads?
Yeah, they actually, okay, I didn't realize this, but they are pretty social. I mean, a lot of the time they are on their own, but hammerheads will often form huge schools. For example, like the smooth hammerhead shark, they'll form schools as they migrate to colder waters during the summer and then back south during the winter. So you will see this on occasion. There are also some hammerheads that will school during their mating rituals, in which the males will be sort of on the outside of the school with females on the inside. And the largest, most attractive, by hammerhead terms, will be on the inside of the school. So that way the male hammerheads have to figure out how to like casually get into the center of the school to mate with the females.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't realize that either. I feel like we don't really think of sharks as very social.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing. And like the videos of schooling hammerheads are really beautiful. Like I look at these videos and I'm like, whoa, that would be an incredible thing to see. Cause it really is just like dozens and dozens of these absolutely bizarre looking sharks just like calmly swimming through the water. And the thing too about hammerheads is they have such a fantastic silhouette, not just cause of the head, but they've got such a giant dorsal fin. Like that fin is so, like, iconically shark-like. It's just, it's so cool. And a lot of, when I was reading about sharks too, they'd say like very distinctive fin, which in my mind means that like if you're a marine biologist, you probably are able to clearly identify a hammerhead fin versus other sharks.
And so you mentioned conservation. How are they doing in the wild?
Unfortunately, they're really not doing well. And I really had no idea that they weren't doing well. Like, I read a lot about conservation on a day-to-day basis. I knew that sharks are threatened quite a bit, but I had no idea that, like, hammerheads in particular were under threat. So of the 9-ish species of hammerhead shark, the smooth hammerhead is considered globally vulnerable. The winghead and the bonnethead sharks are endangered, and all of the rest, so the great hammerhead, the scalloped hammerhead, the scalloped bonnethead, the small eye, and the scoophead, all of which I must say are amazing names, but they are all critically endangered. So it's very unfortunate. The other species, the Carolina hammerhead, is data deficient, so we just don't know enough about it to say for sure. And all of this is largely because not only are sharks really frequently caught as accidental bycatch in fisheries, but they are also a target species for their fins. Shark fins may be eaten in delicacies like shark fin soup or ground up into a powder that's used in some traditional medicines. A lot of shark fin trade happens specifically in Hong Kong, but the greatest amount of shark fin consumption happens in Brazil. Interestingly, I didn't know that they ate it in Brazil. But yeah, so hammerhead shark, and specifically great hammerheads, are particularly sought after for shark fin soup. Apparently it just tastes extra good, as far as I could tell. And it makes up approximately 5.9% of the shark fin trade. Now, that doesn't seem like a huge percent, but I got the sense that they're sort of like harder to acquire. And also, like, there's a lot of species of shark that are being used in this trade. But it does seem pretty high in demand. Even when hammerheads, though, are caught unintentionally in fisheries, they have a particularly low survival rate, even if they're caught and released. The other unfortunate thing is because a lot of the time they're migrating together, if you're catching one hammerhead shark, you can be catching a lot of them just because of that aggregation behavior. So it's not looking good for them there. As well as the fact that, you know, I mentioned before, this is a very long-lived species. They take many years to mature. In some cases, it can take like 10 plus years. So those generation times are really small. They're not out here spawning like hundreds of babies every time they mate either. They're having, as I said before, like 10 to 20, 10 to 40, you know, depending on the species. And they can only mate once every 2 years. So again, we're looking at very low population generation time and these pretty intense fishing pressures. So, you know, our understanding of their decline comes from data on how many are being caught in the fishery. So we can compare how many were being caught, you know, in the 90s versus 2010. And then we can get an understanding of maybe how many, how much of a decline we're seeing. So for the great hammerhead in the Northwest Atlantic Ocean, we've seen a 90% decline in the species as of 2002. That's just one step, but really we're seeing at least about 50% declines in most populations of hammerhead sharks globally. So very not good. However, there is some hope for one, that kind of predictable aggregating behavior of sharks and the fact that they give birth to their pups in particular nursery locations tells us that there are certain places and times where the sharks are particularly vulnerable or where we can sort of put those protection efforts. So if we put restrictions on fishing in those areas at those times, that could help their populations. There are also a lot of communities and biologists who are working really hard to protect sharks. One of the organizations is Minorities in Shark Sciences, who are helping to encourage racial minorities to get into shark biology and shark science. They provide funded opportunities for marine biologists from a diversity of backgrounds to do research, outreach, and conservation surrounding sharks and shark science. So definitely check that out if you're interested or donate. If you don't already follow their Director of Public Relations, Jada Elcock on TikTok and Instagram, you absolutely must because she's really out there doing the most when it comes to just really good SciComm videos and animal videos, but with a particular focus on sharks. So that's the hammerhead shark. Let's give it some major props for being just the funkiest looking thing. It can feel a delicious stingray hiding below the surface of the ocean floor. It migrates long distances with its buddies, and it can give you the side eye better than any other creature on the planet. We gotta add the hammerhead shark to the list of ugly animals that still need a lot of love from us so it can get the protection it needs.
Thank you so much, Olivia. Such an informative episode, and I definitely think, yeah, hammerhead sharks are kind of one of those, like, to me at least, they're sort of one of those animals where it's like, oh yeah, that's a kind of cool, funky animal, and then I just never really think about them, but they are like a real animal that has like interesting biology and needs our help and yeah, is not doing well in the wild. So I think this is a good reminder for sure.
Yeah, again, we just really need to like embrace Shark Week and just try and, you know, give the sharks the recognition they deserve, the positive recognition they deserve.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you everyone so much for listening. If you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon to get exclusive rewards, and you can check out our Etsy shop to see the stickers and postcards we have for sale.
You can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok.
Tune in next time to learn more about the insects, fish, and fossils you can find in Animal Crossing: New Horizons. Bye.
Bye.